This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Great news.
There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Manafort and Cohen, guilty. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Wednesday, August 22nd. Glad you could be with us, and here's what we have for you this hour.
Former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort and his former personal attorney Michael Cohen are now convicted felons. What does this mean for the special counsel investigation?
An illegal immigrant from Mexico has been charged in connection with the murder of 20-year-old college student Molly Tibbetts of Iowa.
Following the Great Recession, the bull market today is now in the longest period of uninterrupted gains in American history, nearly 9.5 years.
And a new study says the gender gap in math begins in ninth grade.
Girls comprise just 30% of the top 5,000 ninth graders, but they only make up 18% of the top 500 ninth graders and only 8% of the top 50. So there's a huge gap there between girls and boys in these math competitions.
Market Watch reporter Alessandro Melito on how and why there's a gender gap in math. Her report in about 20 minutes. A jury has found former Trump campaign manager Paul Manafort guilty on 8 counts of tax and financial fraud. On 10 other counts, the panel in Northern Virginia was unable to reach agreement on a verdict. The prosecution is not related to special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation into Russia's election meddling in 2016. Mr. Manafort was found guilty on 5 counts of submitting false tax returns, 1 count of failing to report foreign bank and financial accounts, and 2 counts of bank fraud. He faces a maximum of 80 years in prison. Defense attorney Kevin Downing.
Mr. Manafort is disappointed of not getting acquittals all the way through or a complete hung jury on all counts. However, he would like to thank Judge Ellis for granting him a fair trial.
The government has until August 29 to decide whether it wants to retry the 10 counts that were declared a mistrial. Meanwhile, Mr. Manafort faces a second trial on 7 more criminal charges next month in Washington. President Trump's former personal attorney and fixer, Michael Cohen, has told a federal court that he paid off 2 women to silence them before the 2016 election at Mr. Trump's direction. Mr. Cohen made the admission yesterday in a New York City court that he paid adult film star Stormy Daniels to secure her silence about an affair she said she had with Mr. Trump 12 years ago. The Justice Department alleged that Mr. Cohen also paid to silence another woman in order to influence the 2016 presidential election. Deputy U.S. Attorney Robert Kuzami.
It is illegal for corporations to make contributions to candidates, and it is illegal to make contributions in excess of the amount that Congress set for individuals.
Mr. Cohen pleaded guilty to 8 charges, including allegations that the payments violated campaign finance laws and unrelated charges that he lied to banks to obtain improper loans and avoided paying taxes. Rudy Giuliani, Mr. Trump's personal lawyer now, says Mr. Cohen's case has nothing to do with the president. Analysis of the Cohen case from Chris Lewis, criminal defense attorney and former prosecutor based in Dallas. He's with the firm Crane, Lewis, and Brogdon. Chris, your takeaway.
It's bad for Trump. I mean, you're talking about someone's personal lawyer. He knows where a lot of the bodies are buried, especially with respect to the paying off of these 2 women. And I think what Cohen did is what most defendants do in that situation, and this element of self-preservation kicked in, and he wheeled and dealed so that he would limit his exposure. And I think that the information that he gave, what he pled to, that not only did he admit his own culpability, but by extension, he absolutely implicated the president in criminal wrongdoing as well.
So what happens next in all this?
Great question. I mean, we know that Cohen's going to be sentenced. What he essentially did was entered into, it seems like it is a binding agreement with the government So there are times that the government and the defendant can enter into a binding plea agreement where it binds the judge to this agreement. And in this situation, it looks like it's going to be somewhere around 4 years in prison. So he's given information. That's going to be the offense level that they start at, I think 46 to 63 months. He then will probably also, as we talked about in Manafort, receive a 5K1.1, being a substantial assistance to the government if he actually debriefed with them and told them everything they wanted to know. That would further reduce the amount of time that he's going to spend in prison. As far as what happens to the president, it's anybody's guess. I think a lot of this is where we start mixing a little bit of the criminal with the political. There's questions about whether or not a sitting president can be indicted, and I think right now they're leaning towards no, or at least that's not the path that they would take, is to indict President Trump. But with the elections coming up, and if the Democrats end up taking over the House again at some point, you might very well see impeachment proceedings. Mm. But as far as just the question, if we were not dealing with a president, if we were dealing with Michael Cohen and his client, who was running for office and isn't currently the president of the United States, I think you would absolutely see a situation where the lawyer, Michael Cohen, has admitted wrongdoing, has pled guilty, and then the candidate would also be charged as a co-conspirator in that crime.
We're speaking with criminal defense attorney Chris Lewis in Dallas. You mentioned self-preservation before. Is what Mr. Cohen said, that he was directed by President Trump to make these payments, how much credibility does that have? Is it provable?
Yeah, is it provable? I don't know that it's provable. Obviously, the best way to prove something is by, you know, some sort of tangible, objective piece of evidence. It's not by somebody saying something. I mean, it's clear if, let's just, you know, assume for a second that it were possible to put President Trump on trial for this, and the only piece of evidence they had was that these women had been paid off, and Michael Cohen is the only one that somehow implicates the president in directing this to happen. Well, Michael Cohen at that point in time would be ripe for cross-examination and impeaching him, that it's very good for him to be able to say this, because all he's doing, he knew that he was dead to rights. His name was on one of the checks. We know that he paid one of them off.
Mm-hmm.
And all he's doing now is he's trying to throw other people under the bus in order to save himself. I would say that's not the strongest case.
Thanks, Chris. That's Chris Lewis with the firm Crane, Lewis & Brogdon in Dallas. It is 14 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Wednesday. The body of a missing college student has been found in an Iowa cornfield. 20-year-old Molly Tibbetts, a student at the University of Iowa, was discovered yesterday in a field covered with corn stalks. Charged with first-degree murder in the case is a 24-year-old illegal immigrant from Mexico named Christian Rivera. He stands accused of accosting her while she was jogging on July 18th after she threatened to call police. Rick Ron is with the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation.
As we understand it, based on our investigation, he followed her around, circled around a couple times, located her, and then began to interface with her at some point in time on 385th Street.
Authorities said Mr. Rivera is believed to have been in rural Poweshiek County for 4 to 7 years. Investigators said surveillance footage showed Ms. Tibbetts near her hometown of Brooklyn, a town of about 1,400 people, and also showed Mr. Rivera's car. If convicted, he could get life in prison without parole. Iowa does not have the death penalty. It's 20 minutes after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump stands accused of conspiring to commit campaign finance fraud, and two of his closest aides now face jail time after court proceedings delivered a legal and political 1-2 punch in a drama that played out simultaneously across two cities yesterday. A court found one former aide guilty of 8 charges and the other pleaded guilty to another 8 stemming from the federal investigation into the 2016 presidential election. In New York, Trump's longtime fixer, attorney Michael Cohen, admitted to charges that included making illegal campaign contributions. Cohen's attorney, Lanny Davis, appeared last night on MSNBC.
I can tell you that Mr. Cohen has knowledge on certain subjects that should be of interest to the special counsel and is more than happy to tell the special counsel all that he knows.
Meanwhile, a jury in Virginia found Trump's one-time campaign chairman Paul Manafort guilty on 8 counts, including bank fraud, tax fraud, and failure to declare foreign bank accounts. Republican Congressman Duncan Hunter of California and his wife have been charged with using more than $250,000 in campaign funds to finance family trips to Italy and Hawaii, golf outings, school tuition, theater tickets, even fast food purchases, and attempting to disguise the illegal spending in federal records. A federal grand jury indictment depicts the couple as binge spenders who, over 8 years, pocketed a steady stream of dollars intended for campaign purposes. House Speaker Paul Ryan last night removed Hunter from his committee assignments. Facebook has identified and banned hundreds of accounts, groups, and pages engaged in misleading political behavior, CEO Mark Zuckerberg.
We removed more than 650 pages, groups, and accounts for coordinated inauthentic behavior on Facebook and Instagram. These were networks of accounts that were misleading people about who they were and what they were doing.
Facebook says the accounts were linked to Russia and Iran and included the sharing of political material. After more than a century behind bars, the beasts on boxes of animal crackers can now roam free. Mondelez, the parent company of Nabisco, has redesigned its packaging in response to pressure from PETA, which has been protesting the use of animals in circuses for more than 30 years. The new boxes of free-roaming animals are now on store shelves.
Oh, very nice. That changes everything.
It does.
Thanks, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Here's a back-to-school fact to consider. By ninth grade, there's already a gender gap in math. Girls comprise just 30% of the top 5,000 ninth graders in the American mathematics competitions, according to new research distributed by the National Bureau of Economic Research. And the gender gap in math achievement worsens over time. More from MarketWatch reporter Alessandra Melito. Alessandra, what are we learning?
This one report looked at the number of girls and boys that participate in the American mathematics competitions and found that girls tend to fare slightly worse than boys and they don't participate as they get older. So girls comprise just 30% of the top 5,000 ninth graders. But they only make up 18% of the top 500 ninth graders and only 8% of the top 50. So there's a huge gap there between girls and boys in these math competitions. And just so we're clear, the data included, it looked at tests from 1999 to 2007 for more than 200,000 students in about 3,000 high schools in the country.
Wow. So it's obviously a huge sample. So why is this happening? Why do they say this is taking place?
A few reasons. So it doesn't necessarily have to do with the fact that, you know, this whole misconception that girls are worse than boys at math. It's more along the lines, there are a few things. So girls, maybe they might get discouraged. The problem is when you're in the top 500 or 50 or 5,000, you are competing with people who are improving significantly to get into that top 50 or 500 or 5,000. So if you have one person who is not in that list and then they jump into that list, the people who are in the list obviously might have lower improvements and all that stuff. So girls tend to get discouraged by that, or so the report suggested. And sometimes it's just a matter of preference. So if these girls are thinking, well, you know, maybe I'm stronger in other subjects, they might dedicate their time to these other subjects instead. But it's not necessarily that they're worse at math than boys.
Okay.
Other studies have suggested that girls tend to have a bigger fear of math, or they get more anxious around math.
What?
But,
oh,
yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
But eighth grader, like, there was another study that showed eighth graders, but, you know, girls in eighth grade, they're actually very good at math, and it has nothing to do with, you know, with that. So that's good.
So something's happening between eighth grade graduation and the entering of high school, it sounds like.
Yeah, and also throughout throughout high school, throughout college, even when they join the workforce, a lot of girls still, they hear these, you know, messages in society that suggest that they don't really have a role in STEM, which is, you know, science, technology, engineering, and math. They might be discriminated against or told that they should be considering other jobs. So there's a lot of pressure on them.
Thanks, Alessandra. It's MarketWatch personal finance reporter Alessandra Melito. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. When a state ranks among the top 10 in the country for major new and expanded facilities, that's pure growth. When it's tops for four straight years, that's pure Michigan. Long known as a world leader in the automotive industry, Michigan is also a leader in advanced manufacturing, cybersecurity, agribusiness, and aerospace. In fact, CNBC rates Michigan as the most improved state for business. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org.
There's nothing small about your business. Your passion, your hours, your reputation, it's all huge. Your partnerships, even bigger. With Dell Small Business Technology Advisors, you'll get the tech, advice, and one-on-one partnership to help your business grow. Because with reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors, you can focus on what matters most, getting business done. Call 877-BUY-DELL to speak with an advisor today. That's 877-BUY-DELL.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email, thismorning@compassmedianetworks.com.
Hey, thanks for joining us on this Wednesday, August 22nd. Gordon Deal, Jennifer Koschenka, some of our top stories and headlines. Former Trump campaign manager Manafort found guilty of 8 of 18 charges of bank and tax fraud. Former Trump attorney Cohen pleads guilty to paying off two women at Trump's direction, he says. Illegal immigrant accused of murdering an Iowa college student. MTV Video Music Awards dropped 16% in ratings from last year. New study on low-carb diets. We'll have that in about 15 minutes. And the dream come true for a young girl battling leukemia. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. We're coming to you today from the Dell Studios. Dell Small Business Technology Advisors know there's nothing small about your business. They provide one-on-one partnership and reliable Dell PCs with Intel Core processors to get business done. The Senate has emerged as a major impediment to President Trump's hopes for a new space force, while the House GOP has been largely supportive of the idea of creating a new military branch for space. Defense reporter Rebecca Keel at The Hill says skeptics in the Senate from both parties have raised concerns about its cost and the potential for adding to bureaucratic overhead at the Pentagon. Rebecca, what's up here?
Well, the House has been largely supportive of the idea of creating a new branch of the military for space since about last year when they tried to create something similar to Space Force that they at the time called Space Corps. The Senate, when the House came up with that plan, was largely opposed, and they ultimately blocked Space Corps from becoming a reality. Now that Trump has proposed Space Force, the Senate is still not convinced. They still have concerns about costs. They're not quite sure that this would solve the issues they see with the military's handling of space. They think it would just add perhaps too much bureaucracy and even make things worse. So they're still looking for a lot of answers from the Trump administration before they're ready to sign off on this.
It's an interesting split. Why is there the split between the House and Senate, both controlled by Republicans?
Well, it depends on who you ask. If you ask Mike Rogers, who has led the charge in the House for this, he says that it is because, one, they haven't taken a close enough look at the issue, and two, because it is because the Air Force lobbied the Senate against it when they realized the House was pretty much for it. Senators will say that they just, you know, they've already prescribed some fixes to how the military deals with space, so they're waiting for the Pentagon to actually do what they've already asked and seeing how that reforms space operations.
Well, how much money is needed for this or may have been temporarily allocated for it?
We don't know quite yet how much it's going to cost. That is another one of the things the Senate is waiting for. Deputy Defense Secretary Patrick Shanahan, when he was asked right after the Space Force announcement how much it's going to cost, he said the Pentagon hadn't done a full analysis yet, but he's expecting it's going to be in the billions. During Vice President Pence's speech where he announced the Trump administration's plans for military space, said they're going to request an initial $8 billion over 5 years. But my understanding is that's going to be more for acquisition rather than setting up this new service.
Okay. We're speaking with Rebecca Kiel, defense reporter at The Hill. She's written a piece entitled Senate Emerges as Obstacle to Trump's Space Force. I know you referenced in the story there's a recognition that China is increasingly turning to space, leaving a risk that the U.S. could be left behind. Does everybody agree with that? Or lawmakers,
yeah,
I should say?
Yeah, nobody is disputing the fact that space is becoming a contested military domain that needs protection. And it's not just China, it's Russia as well. Lawmakers across the board have expressed concern about both countries' tests of anti-satellite missiles, their potential to hack satellites. So there is a recognition that this is an issue that needs to be addressed. It's just a matter of what the best way to approach it is.
What happens following the midterms? Are there different scenarios that could unfold?
Yeah, that's a good question. If Congress flips to Democrats, I don't see this being a priority for them, especially in the Senate. In the House, like I said, there's been pretty much bipartisan consensus, so they could still pursue this, especially because the NDAA is going to have to go through Congress anyway.
Well, I know there's one person in your story who was, Dan Sullivan, the Alaska senator, who said readiness has plummeted. That's a scary phrase.
Yeah, the Congress and the Pentagon have been talking for a few years now about what they call a readiness crisis, and that was one of the reasons that they have been asking for these $716 billion budgets, is to turn that around. So Dan Sullivan's point was, let's turn the readiness of the services we have already around before we start trying to add another service that we're going to have to train, we're going to have to divert money to. Let's fix what we have before we start something new.
Thanks, Rebecca. Defense reporter Rebecca Kiel at The Hill. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Wednesday. Beyond the headlines now, this morning's Mike Gavin is here with a look at some of the other stories you'll be talking about this morning.
Good morning. Well, you can certainly count New York Knicks fans among the most disgruntled in all of professional sports, with 45 years having gone by since their last title and their current best player on the shelf indefinitely with a knee injury. Now, a disgruntled fan has had enough and is selling his fandom on eBay. In an actual eBay listing that, as of this morning, was still on the site and accepting bids, the fan named Evan has put his fandom up for auction and says he will pledge his fan allegiance to the team of the winning bidder's choosing. He also says he will toss out his Knicks trash can and burn no less than 3 articles of Knicks memorabilia. He also says that he will bet $500 on his new team's over-under for the season and attend at least 1 away game, among other things. The bidding closes on Friday, and so far it's drawn more interest than you might think, with 14 bidders pushing the price up to $3,100 as of this morning.
For fandom.
For fandom, yes. Mm. For getting rid of his Knicks fandom and then switching allegiance to it to a new team.
Wow.
Yeah. Now
that's like an intangible thing. And
yes.
Somebody's putting up
right
$3,100 for it.
Which is why I mentioned a couple of times that it is still on the site as of right now, but
yeah.
I don't feel like it's going to be for much longer.
Okay.
I think we've done stories like this before about people putting things up for bid that don't actually exist, and then eBay comes along and says, no, you can't do that.
So he should take the money now, probably,
yeah.
if he can get it.
If there's some way for him to close that out today, he probably should.
It's very entrepreneurial.
My advice, yes.
If he seals the deal,
yeah.
I would tip my cap to him for having pulled this off. That's like only in America type
right.
thing.
Right, and he's not doing this on a whim. If you look at this this bid on this page on eBay. He's got this huge essay basically about how he became a Knicks fan, how he became disgruntled over the years. It's like six paragraphs long.
So it drips with passion.
Yeah. I mean, he didn't come to this decision overnight, and it's not just a quick money grab. I feel like he's very serious about this.
And certainly has legit complaints. I mean, this is one of the worst organizations in all of sports. And when you consider that it's in a major city, it truly sticks out like a sore thumb
for
New York Knicks.
For sure. And here's, Gordon, one way to try to mitigate your bad deeds against a church. Have the congregation pray for you. That's what happened over the weekend at a Waterbury, Connecticut church, where police say a surveillance video showed an unidentified man taking an estimated $4,000 worth of electronics from inside of the Mount Olive AME Zion Church at approximately 1 a.m. Sunday morning, just hours before service was set to begin. One church member told local TV that the theft cripples the efforts of the church's ministry because it stops other members that are sick or unable to attend services. The thief did at least pretend to be remorseful for his crime, leaving behind an apology note that read, "Pray for me. Sorry, brothers. Save me." And he drew a little sad face on there as well. And despite their sadness and I'm sure anger, the church did just that, praying for the thief in church just hours after his crime.
Wow. Wonder if it will help him with the authorities.
Yeah.
Assuming he's eventually caught.
Yeah, something tells me that's not admissible in court. I'm just guessing.
Right. Thank you, Mike. 13 minutes now in front of the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. Don't forget, by the way, we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter with the username @ThisMorningShow. You can follow me directly on Twitter as well with the username @GordonDeal. Low carbohydrate diets like keto may be great for losing weight, but they may not be so good for your lifespan, according to a new study published in The Lancet. Researchers followed 15,000 self-reporting Americans over a span of 25 years and found that moderate carb eaters lived up to 4 years longer than low carb eaters. But as menshealth.com points out, moderate carb eaters also lived a year longer than people who consumed mostly carbs, which means you could also be in trouble if you go overboard on that starchy stuff. The researchers believe people on low-carb diets may die earlier because they're not eating enough fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. Not all low-carb diets lead to an early death. In the study, low-carb eaters who got their protein and fat from plants instead of animals did not increase their chances of dying earlier. It's entirely possible to get plenty of protein while scaling back on meat. Lentils, chickpeas, hemp seeds, quinoa, and protein powders all pack plenty of protein. It's 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Gordon, President Trump is confronting one of the most perilous moments of his presidency after two one-time members of his inner circle simultaneously were labeled guilty of criminal charges. Although Trump largely ignored the jarring news, at a campaign rally in West Virginia, questions are mounting about his possible legal exposure.
It doesn't involve me, but I still feel, it's a very sad thing that happens. This has nothing to do with Russian collusion.
Trump's former campaign chairman, Paul Manafort, was convicted of financial crimes at nearly the same moment yesterday that Trump's former personal attorney, Michael Cohen, pleaded guilty to a series of felonies, including campaign finance violations that the lawyer said he carried out in coordination with Trump. A murder charge has been filed against a man who led investigators to remains believed to be the body of 20-year-old college student Molly Tibbetts, who disappeared from her small hometown in central Iowa 1 month ago. The body was discovered in a field near Tibbetts' hometown of Brooklyn, Iowa. Rick Ron of the Iowa Division of Criminal Investigation says 24-year-old Christian Rivera has been charged with the murder.
We have confirmed with Homeland Security Investigations that he is an illegal alien, and we believe he has been in this area now for 4 to 7 years.
Investigators believe Rivera followed Tibbetts on July 18th and abducted her as she was out for a jog. A cause of death remains unclear. Hawaii residents are rushing to stores to stock up on bottled water, food, and other supplies as they face the threat of heavy rain, flash flooding, and high surf as a strengthening hurricane continues to churn toward the state. Hurricane Lane, a Category 5 hurricane, is about 500 miles southeast of Honolulu. For the third consecutive year, Serena Williams was the highest-paid female athlete. Forbes says Williams, who earned only $62,000 in winnings over the past year, received $18.1 million in endorsements. Caroline Wozniacki, who captured her first Grand Slam title at this year's Australian Open, was second on the list with combined earnings of $13 million, while reigning U.S. Open champion Sloane Stephens was third.
That's That's all women athletes?
Good to be tennis players.
Wow. How about that? I would have thought a golfer might have been in there.
Nope.
That's always the case
with tennis,
though. Right. Slim earnings, but huge endorsement deals, right? That's, I think that's been Federer's deal forever. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. 12-year-old Aspen Kelly has a special request for her upcoming birthday, postcards. The girl from Oklahoma will become a teenager on September 1, but she can't celebrate the way she wants to. Aspen has leukemia and is unable to travel. So CBS News says Aspen made a request for postcards from all over the country and around the world, and her expectations were far surpassed. Her mother, Vanessa Kelly, first shared Aspen's desire for postcards on Facebook last month, hoping to get one from all 50 states. She included a P.O. box address, said she would save the postcards and give them to Aspen on her birthday, September 1. Little did she know, hundreds of people would share that Facebook post, and Aspen would be sent an overwhelming number of postcards. She didn't just get one from each of the 50 states. She got over 1,000 altogether from every state and 49 countries. One postcard came from Greece, but it wasn't the distance it traveled that made it impressive. It was the person who sent it, actor Tom Hanks. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Great news! There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.